You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is by rural leaders and for rural leaders. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by people who get it, people who have lived, worked, and ministered in small, out-of-the-way places, and people who understand the immense value of the work that God does there. I'm your host, Joe Epley, and today I am excited to interview somebody who is my boss and kind of my superintendent in my current role, but is also an incredible pastor. He's had a long pastoral career, and a lot of it has touched small towns and kind of what that does. And even now in his role as the superintendent of Montana, he's working with small towns pretty constantly as they are, you know, they make up a lot of our Montana zip codes. And so it's my pleasure to count him as a friend, but also to tap into him as a source of wisdom. But Pastor Dave Phillips, how are you today, sir?
Hey, Joe, I'm doing great. It's awesome to be here and really thankful to you for taking the time to make this resource available to so many pastors. So thanks for the awesome job you're doing.
Well, thank you. And we're excited. I know that at Rural Advancement, we really love the idea of tapping people who understand and know what a rural church practitioner has gone through. And I know that your story is filled with a lot of that. You know, I even think of what you told me about, you know, where you grew up and kind of how that turned into pastoring. And so maybe we start there. And would you just walk us on the flyover journey? You know, where did you start? Where are you now? What are the kind of the stops in between? How does it connect to the rural church? So tell us your story, Pastor Dave.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Joe. You know, I didn't really intend on being a full-time pastor. I really wanted a ranch and farm with my father-in-law. That was my goal in life, but I still went to 4 years of Bible college. Just wanted to be prepared and wanted to make myself available in the little country church that I attended. I wanted to lead the youth group and do whatever I could to further the kingdom in the town that we were in.
Sure.
So that's kind of, you know, was after graduating, I farmed for a couple of years, found myself not enjoying it like I thought I was going to.
Sure.
Instead, I enjoyed leading the youth group way more.
Sure.
And that just led when the pastor resigned from this small country church, the board asked me to take it. I was hesitant at first, but eventually did. And that began my journey into being a lead pastor for not only that church, but for three other churches following that.
Sure.
So it was a great journey.
Yeah, well, let's take each stop individually then. Tell me just a little bit about, you know, maybe the town you're in, size of church, how long you were there, and just kind of walk us, you know, I know you were at that church, another one, then up to Missoula, and then up to your current job. So maybe hit us each stop along the
sure.
route, you know?
Yeah. Well, began in a rural farm community. Actually, the town itself was 300 people,
sure.
unincorporated, but, you know, probably a good 2,000 people in the surrounding area. So that's where we began, was in that church, happened to be my wife's home church. Again, town was 300 people, but it was a great church. I think we ran about 110 people consistently. So that was exciting. All Mormon community.
Sure.
So they had the second, actually larger church than us by far.
Wow, sure.
But nonetheless, it was a great community. Really enjoyed the people, but almost all of them were agriculture related.
Sure.
Very, very few that weren't. So that was kind of our first church. I served as volunteer, part-time paid youth
sure,
pastor
sure, sure.
for 2 years and then lead pastor for almost 8 years
wow.
in that church. And then we moved to a town outside of Spokane, Washington, which was about 3,800 people.
Sure,
so it was
a
big
step up,
jump.
Big step up.
That was huge.
Yeah.
And that was a pretty amazing church there. What God did in that church while we were there really surpassed any expectations that we ever had. The farm community, I loved it. The only thing that I struggled with was when kids would graduate from high school, they would move out of the area
sure.
simply because there was no work for them. you know, parents couldn't afford to have three or four kids split up the farm. Just didn't work. So they would move away and nobody was moving into the town. So when I moved outside of Spokane, it was pretty amazing to, you know, be closer to a bigger city and to have people that really wanted to stay in the community and be a part of it.
Sure. And you were there for how long?
I was there for 10 years at that church.
And then after that, where'd you go?
Well, after that, we stepped aside maybe a little bit too soon from our church in Medical Lake, Washington. But we ended up taking some time off, going through some issues with our daughter that we were trying to help her make it through high school. And really was just praying that God would put us where he needed us, not necessarily where we wanted to go.
That's a dangerous prayer.
Yeah. So. I was hoping God wouldn't take me up on it, but he did. And one particular church that I knew because I had served on the presbytery had a lot of problems. Two failed pastorates back to back. But the Lord, I just really felt that God just kept pressing me to check it out. And even though I told him no five or six times when they called, I finally said yes and went and interviewed. And we ended up going there for 6 years. So that was the shortest tenure that we had at a church. But we worked through a lot of issues that they had with, you know, some of the past failures that the church had gone through and experienced. But I went from a church where I was trusted implicitly to a church where it was really hard for a lot of people to trust the pastor because of what they had been through. But, you know, we stayed for 6 years, tried to help them through the issues that they were facing, made some great strides, and then went backwards. Worship wars and grew 100 people, and then 60 people left because they didn't like the worship leader. When I let the worship leader go, 40 people left because they liked him. So we did a kind of a backward stance on that one. And then, of course, from there, the Lord brought me to Missoula, to Christian Life Center. And that was really an answer to prayer. The longing of my heart was to be able to pastor a church that was solid. And we were there 13 years. So that was
and
a real blessing.
Since then, you stepped in as superintendent, obviously, of Montana for the last 8 years.
Been, 7 years.
Oh, 7 years,
one more to go.
There you go. Well, and I love that part of your story because even as the town size may have increased over time, it still feels like you kept dipping your toe into these small town church and small town lives. And we know that even Missoula, you know, one of our larger towns, is still it's just quite Montanan, you know, quite rural, quite small in that sense. Let's dive into different parts of your story. And obviously, you and I have a good relationship, and we've just been able to talk offhand, but I know that the last time we talked about this specifically, we talked a lot about the concept of, like, hospitality and kind of culture of a small-town church, and we'll kind of take those one after the other. We'll start with hospitality and then dive into maybe some greater culture issues that we find. But one of the most common things that I think is a struggle is for a small town, like, what does hospitality mean as the pastor of a small town church? And if we're not happy with where it's at, like, how are we growing in that? You know what I'm saying? So start us off there. Give us some wisdom, you know?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, little town, 300 people, hospitality was a little bit different. You know, if people came to church, hopefully you knew about tractors and combines because that was always the talk following church or even before church. So if you weren't in the farm industry, you'd probably be a little bit bored, you know, listening to everybody. But I still found the people to be very welcoming, even though having a visitor was very rare because people just weren't moving into the area. But I still think the people did a great job reaching out to people that were new when that did happen and people would come. Probably found more when I was in the town of 3,800 people. I think the church, I really worked with the church for a period of time to really learn what it meant to be accepting. That was during the 90s, and so we had a lot of people with spiked green colored hair. In Spokane, especially, you would see that, just the various cultural things that were going on. And I really began working with the church of how will we respond if people, God sends people like that to us.
Sure.
Will we welcome them, love them? You know, what are we going to do in the community? What are we going to be known as? What kind of church are we going to be known as? And the church had a previous reputation that wasn't so good with a lot of people in the community. But that really began to change. You know, the church really did a lot of outreach, putting on plays and different things. You know, as a smaller church, it was pretty amazing some of the things they pulled off. But it really began to be kind of the central church in the community.
Oh, nice.
That people, if they didn't attend regularly, they would at least come several times a year to the different events that we offered. So they had a great handle on welcoming people, really loving people that were different than them. And that made a huge difference in the growth of the church.
Sure, yeah. And just to get a couple brass tacks pulled out of those stories, like, what, you know, let's say a pastor's noticing, like, man, we're not feeling hospitable. What are some, maybe what's step one and two they could take to help their church shift that reputation, you know?
Well, you know, the only reason I left the small town that we began ministry in was because I wasn't really able to give a gospel presentation as far as salvation goes. I knew who was saved.
Sure.
Some I had a little question about, but most of them were saved. And it just felt like I was dying on the vine because I really wanted to become more evangelistic. So when I moved to Medical Lake, my prayer was, Lord, place me somewhere where I can have an opportunity to lead people to Christ.
Sure.
So we were there a couple of years. I didn't, you know, the church really came together, gelled. It was growing as far as, you know, being healthy. But I really wasn't seeing salvations like I had dreamt and prayed and believed God for. So I sent a flyer out to everyone in the community, inviting them to come to our church, describing a little bit about the church. And it was very, very well done flyer. I mean, I had the Seventh-day Adventist president call me one day out of the blue and just say, hey, Dave, I got this flyer in the mail. It was fantastic. Man, you're doing a great job. But when I went to the post office, which was across the street from the church, people would sort their mail. And, here are barrels where they sort their mail full of my flyers.
Sure.
And it was very disheartening to me. It wasn't the only thing I had done, but obviously it was one of the last things that I had really put a lot of time and effort in. And it didn't produce any fruit. So I basically went back to my office, I shut the door, got down on my knees and said, God, you know, I came here because I really wanted to see people come to know you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what to do to change our culture, to change who we are, to make our church more attractive. And in that moment, the Holy Spirit spoke very clearly to me. And the words just came, I have people all around you I would send to you if I knew they wouldn't get hurt.
Mm.
And that floored me. I really had to work that through in my mind, what that meant, what I felt the Holy Spirit was saying to me. But I began teaching our church after that for like several months on how welcoming of a church are we? Mm. How are we going to respond if somebody comes in that looks totally different than us? Are you going to scoot away from them in the pew, or are you going to scoot toward them, put your arm around them, and welcome them?
Sure.
And our people really, really began getting it. Wasn't long after that the Teen Challenge Center that was in Spokane, I was friends with them, actually was serving on their board. And the director came to me one day and said, Dave, we have about 20 guys that don't travel with us on the weekend because they're too new to the program. We only take four or five guys with us. Would you be okay if they started attending your church on a regular basis?
Sure.
And I said, absolutely. These guys, you know, started coming. They would sit on the very front row, two rows actually of guys with white shirts and ties on.
Sure.
people would come in and immediately think they were Mormon missionaries,
sure,
because that's what they look like. But, you know, we had to, we still had to work through issues. I mean, I had one man come to me and say, I don't want my daughters to be around these men. I don't trust sure. them. And kind of threatening to leave the church. And I explained to him, you know, these guys don't go anywhere alone. They go two by two everywhere they go. You know, let's give it a chance. If we have any issues, we'll address it. But let's hope and pray that we don't.
Yeah.
And we didn't.
Nice.
So it was pretty cool for our people to see these guys start coming in. A lot of times they were coming off of a high because sure. they'd just been brought in off the street. And they were looking around with big wide eyes, trying to figure out why people were singing, why they yeah. were raising their hands. But, you know, eventually you would see those same guys like a month later with tears just streaming down their face because it was starting to become a reality who God was. Mm. So our people saw that every week.
Yeah.
And then occasionally I would have them share their stories. And our people just loved Adult yeah. Teen Challenge. They couldn't
sure.
they couldn't serve enough or help enough.
Sure.
And that really began changing that church because people really cared about them.
Yeah.
Then it wasn't, you know, too long after that, maybe a year after that, that a chaplain of a local prison started attending our church and asked if we would send people out on Sunday afternoon since they didn't have a service.
Sure.
So a bunch of our people volunteered to do that on a weekly basis. It was a co-ed prison. So
sure.
most of these individuals were serving a one-year sentence for small-time drug use. And they really started getting their hearts right with God in prison. It was just a very unique situation where the warden of the prison gave permission to the chaplain to bring them to our church once a month on a Sunday night for any of them that wanted to be
sure.
baptized. So they would come out for our Sunday night services, invite their friends and family, so the place would be packed. And then they would, you know, tell their story before they were baptized. So a lot of these individuals, when they got out of prison, were worried about being accepted
sure.
at a church. So they asked if they could start attending our church on a regular basis,
sure.
which we said absolutely.
Yeah.
And so we have this huge number of Teen Challenge guys that are there, and then we have co-ed men and women coming
yeah.
from the local prison.
Yeah.
And it just changed the entire culture of our church into being a church that welcomed people. And yeah. it wasn't just, you know, ex-drug addicts or people that had served time in prison that started coming. That really began bringing a lot of even professional people started attending the church because they saw that what was happening was real and
yeah.
that it was a God thing that was going on.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I love that it starts in this moment of prayer. I love that you took your congregation kind of on this journey, and then you got to start seeing this authentic life change that kind of caught fire. Let's dive down on specifically like Teen Challenge, because obviously, and for those who might not be familiar, you know, Teen Challenge is an addiction treatment, you know, ministry that's like trying to help people find freedom and that kind of thing. But, you know, you talk about how these people started coming to your church and it changes the church. And then over time, though, like Teen Challenge is a ministry that you still serve on their board, even nationally, you know what I'm saying? And so obviously it's a ministry that's had your heart for a long time. And so I kind of wanted to dive into that because here's what I know. Small towns, famously, there's always a crowd of people, and usually you're aware of that crowd of people that do struggle heavily with substance abuse. You know, there's a lot of stats out there that'll tell us, like, man, the amount of drugs and alcohol, the pressure facing teenagers in a small town. You know, say, hey, what else do we do besides party? And you know, so you've kind of got this ripe mission field of people who are probably walking through some form of addiction. And so, again, you've already mentioned, you know, hey, we tried to make room for them, things like that. But how does somebody, I don't know, take us a step further on the journey? What are three really practical things that, whether it's your church or whether what Teen Challenge does, where you're like, man, how does a rural pastor truly welcome and disciple those people? You know, feel free to say, here's a pitfall to avoid, or here's something that really worked for us, or here's a great format, but like what are the things that are going to help people effectively become a church that reaches those struggling with addiction?
Yeah, that's good. We, Teen Challenge, I should say, has a lot of different programs. Not only do they have the residential program that is a year in length, if not a little bit longer, but they also have a lot of programs that you can just go in for the day.
Oh, sure.
So that's making a big difference around the nation for people who don't feel like they can sign up and sure. live at a center. Maybe they have a family or a job that they can't sure. give up. So there's resources are available now. And of course, there's a lot of church programs out there that churches throughout the nation are doing as well, where they hold a weekly meeting or a monthly meeting. Those have all been extremely helpful for sure. people to have a place to go and to be able to talk about it. I think the biggest thing is that nobody wants to feel judged because they're, you know, going through a struggle. So they've got to feel safe, and they've got to, sure. you know, feel like they're really getting some help, some accountability in the struggle that they're going through. So there's various ways of doing that. But, you know, I'm just thankful that we're seeing more and more churches that are offering classes either weekly or monthly where people can come and sure. learn how to find freedom from their addiction. So those are some of the things that, you know, I'm really excited to see the church world becoming more involved in.
Yeah.
Like you said, in rural communities, there's a lot of struggles that people yeah. have with addictions. But, you know, are they going to come to a church?
Sure.
You know, it's not very likely. I mean, you know, that's the struggle right there. There has to be something where they really feel compelled to attend, or they really feel loved and not judged, for them to be able to take that step and move, you know, toward the church or even toward a program that the church offers. Teen Challenge, certainly that way. People know that it's a Christian, faith-based
sure.
program. And so, you know, I'd say a large majority of the people coming in don't have a background, a faith-based
sure.
background at all. So it's all very new to them. But for the first time in their lives, they see that there is, I guess, a source, if you would, or a power that's available that can break their bondage.
Sure.
And it's really interesting. 75% of our directors in Teen Challenge centers around the United States were all former Teen Challenge students.
Sure.
And now they're leading the programs. And
sure.
so, I mean, that speaks highly of the effectiveness of the program and what's happening there. But again, Teen Challenge isn't the only way.
Yeah.
But certainly it's making a tremendous difference with what we're going through as a nation right now
yeah,
with our young
for sure.
people. So.
And you mentioned, again, this safe environment. Again, whether it's one hurdle or one really practical way, I mean, whether it was, hey, there were certain rules around how these people interacted or... But again, you know, let's say 10 people are showing up and there are those parents who are concerned saying, how do I have a thriving kids ministry and a thriving prison ministry or addiction ministry and like all those things? And so, man, just even one practical thought of like, hey, how do you make that safe environment, not only for the people coming out of the program, for the people at your church who might be experiencing those people for the first time?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, you have to put protections in place for your congregation. I obviously... Parents are concerned that their kids are going to get sucked into
sure.
the other group of kids that are rebellious, and that does happen. But we have to be aware of that, and we have to be working toward that. So, you know, for parents to know that it's a safe environment, for people to know the rules, you know, even in Missoula, we allowed sex offenders to attend, but we had them sign a contract with us that they would not be in a place of in the church where there were kids. They would never be alone. We always assigned a buddy to them.
Sure.
So if they went to the restroom, they had to have their buddy go with
sure.
them or gal, whatever it was. In our case, it was always men that we were dealing with. But the congregation knew that they were safe.
Sure.
Which again, that falls on the leadership of the church to provide
yeah.
that environment where people can come in that don't hold the values that we hold.
Sure.
We have no idea where they're coming from. But if we make it so that our own people are safe, and then they can really start seeing the need in the individual's life, rather than focusing on their actions, they can focus on more of their story of what they've been through and coming alongside of them and trying to help them.
Yeah, that is huge. I love kind of the unashamed embrace of saying, hey, there are rules to this, and it means that we have to kind of do that dance. Switching gears just a little bit, obviously there's the A side of ministry, you know, the stuff we love to talk about, the sermons where everything goes right and people get saved. But there's also tougher pieces of ministry that I think, again, hit all pastors. But, you know, I think of often, we're gonna turn to the subject of kind of not, betrayal's kind of a dramatic word, I'll be honest. But I think every pastor has experienced, you know, what happens when somebody leaves my church? And let's say in a larger church setting, as the lead pastor, you might not always be aware of who these individuals are. But the smaller the church gets, the more that absence is felt, and the more that absence feels personal. You know, someone walks up to you and says, hey, I'm leaving. And like, you know this person, you know their family, their history, you know maybe why they're leaving or their frustrations. And frequently it might center around you or somebody else in your church. And then you still have to see that person at the grocery store because there's only one in town. You know what I'm saying? And so you kind of have this deep sense. And I know that you have walked through multiple versions of this story. You know, from your first church, you tell me, hey, these families kind of walked out at some point. Even later in your church journey where you're saying, hey, you know, the worship leader leaves and people stay and then people leave. And so you've kind of walked through these different versions. And I'll be honest, Pastor Dave, that kind of moment, even if you experience one of them, has the power to take a pastor out of the game. But you've walked through half a dozen and you're still doing what you're doing. And so not to say like, you know, what's the secret, but like, how has God sustained you through betrayal? And like, how can you encourage other pastors, you know, here's how to stay the course?
Sure. Well, when I first entered ministry and was pastoring in the small town of 300 people,
yeah.
I mean, obviously everybody knows what's going on in your church and community. But, you know, for me, you know, I came in with a work ethic of farming. And
sure.
So, you know, start at 6 a.m, get done at 8 o'clock at night.
Sure.
And I didn't change a lot of that when I came into ministry. It wasn't quite that, you know, that those many hours, but
sure.
Nonetheless, I still came in with that work ethic, you know, started a Christian school, built onto the building, you know, just a lot of great things that were happening, investing my whole heart and soul into what I was doing. And, you know, then we had a couple of families that got out of balance in the area of deliverance, you know, which I kind of let it go and run its course.
Sure.
And a lot of what they got into was very true. It was very right. But there was some imbalance that was starting to occur, and I had to correct that. So these, you know, three families that I was very close to, that I cared a lot about, and I thought they, you know, felt the same way about me, ended up leaving the church. Mm-hmm. And that was very different. That was the first time in my life that I had felt that kind of rejection, I guess,
sure.
Because of correction and a few things that had happened. And the Lord really had to teach me what forgiveness is, that forgiveness is not a one-time thing.
Sure.
You can forgive and then start thinking about it and take it all back,
sure.
You know, the next day. So, you know, I learned at first when I would pass these people driving into town or when I would see them at the grocery store, I would have to choose to forgive them all over again, because not only did they leave the church, but they attacked me verbally,
sure.
Saying I was never called to ministry and, you know, certain things like that. But, you know, I found that after sometimes seemed like 50 times a day, I would have to choose to forgive.
Sure.
Pretty soon it became, you know, 15 times, then 10
sure.
times, then 5 times. Then there came a point several months down the road where I could drive past them and just pray over them. You know,
sure.
I just say, God bless them. There was no animosity in my heart or hurt feelings because I had let it go, and I'd given it to the Lord. In fact, one particular lady, I, you know, said that I was never called into ministry, and she was actually the closest to my wife and I, so that hurt the most. But I thought, you know, she'll probably never apologize for what she's said or done,
sure,
and that's okay. But nonetheless, I think it was 20 years down the road, she wrote a letter to us stating that she was wrong.
Wow.
And that that I really was called into ministry, that she had judged me wrong. And, you know, it wasn't like, oh, yeah, I've been waiting for this my whole life.
Sure.
You know, it was very kind of her that she did that. But I was just thankful because there was no animosity or bitterness there when she did write the letter. I still was praying for her and others on a continual basis. So I think that's the biggest thing. It hurts. It stings.
Yeah.
And it never changes. I mean, no matter where you pastor, no matter how large your church, people are going to leave because they don't like something, whether it be about you or about the way the church is run. And, you know, if you focus on that and take it personal, it can destroy you. But if you realize that's life, that's people, you just have to keep loving them, praying for them, releasing your own feelings to the Lord and releasing forgiveness constantly.
Yeah.
You know, I have found that that's what has sustained me and kept me from becoming bitter or resentful.
Man, that's huge. I really like that idea that forgiveness is not just, because again, I think we kind of want to deal with it and move on and deal with it, move on. And it's just like, hey, actually, forgiveness is quite the journey. And it is something we're kind of just always going in and out of saying, hey, people are people. Let's not expect them to act different. But let's embrace forgiveness as a process. So let's flip the script. What do you do when somebody's difficult and maybe should have left but doesn't? Okay, because I think, again, every church has them. But again, in the small town church, you feel it. You know, you've got 60 people on a Sunday, and one of them just won't leave. And we love people. We bless people. But you go, you know, is this the thorn in the flesh that Paul talked about? Is this the difficult leader, the difficult board member that just, you know, you just pray and say, God, it'd be a lot easier if they could just go somewhere else, and yet they remain. And like, how do you pastor those people effectively? How do you pastor through that effectively?
Sure. Well, you know, I guess I'm thankful that when I was younger, I was a lot more gracious with people who were constantly critical, constantly complaining, you know, to the point where I just constantly prayed for them myself and tried to be as kind to them as I possibly could be. So, you know, I've only had one church where I had someone for 10 years that was like that. And that was, you know, that was my second church that I pastored. I'm thankful that I was as naive as I was at the time because, you know, I would try to look at the things that were going on in that person's life. I mean, their father died when they were real young, raised by a single mom, just, you know, had their difficulties that they had gone through in life. And so they were, you know, extra critical, it seems, of the church or me. And I just kept loving them and being kind to them, this individual. You know, now I'm not so sure that I would do that. I would probably have been a little bit more direct and said, you know what, if you're really this miserable being here, or you don't like me at all, you know, maybe you'd be happier going somewhere else. But I never did that. I just kept loving this person. I know one time somebody was talking to them years, you know, after we had been together. And this person was asking a question about me, and this individual said, he's the best pastor I've ever had. Mm. Well, that blew me out of the water because I didn't think that was the case, that he liked me at all. But I did see that my patience with him, my continual loving him when he was unlovable, had made a difference, even though it was years down the road.
Sure. I really like that approach. I think my primary experience, of course, is in the youth world. And we do talk about this a lot where, you know, you love and care about teenagers and students, and there's a real chance that they will leave youth group, live their own life, walk away from Jesus. And then 15 years, 10 years down the road, they'll say, maybe that pastor had it right, you know? And I love that you're saying, hey, turns out it might just be a teenager issue. It just might be a people issue, you know,
sure.
Where it's like, hey, and I love the character that you got to build by saying, hey, I'm just going to love, pray, be patient. You know, it's God building you up. But also, man, to have that years down the road to say, man, that guy really did appreciate my leadership. That's huge, Pastor Dave. Next question, again, kind of maybe hitting our trinity of difficulty here, but you mentioned, so obviously, you know, you talk very fondly of your time, really at your first church, but even especially Medical Lake. I mean, you really said, man, we just got to see the growth and the excitement and the fruit of everything. And then you mentioned this other church that you end up in a season later, you know. And you mentioned that kind of being a tough season, you know, where you say, hey, we're trying to deal with problems and help the church overcome hurt, you know, and you see the rise and the fall, the roller coaster. You know, we had a good day, and then months later, it's like, well, people left because of this, and then we fired them, and then more people left because they actually liked him. And I remember you telling me you kind of left that season going, hey, what was, you know, what's the fruit? What actually, you know, took place? And so, challenging question, kind of a theological question, but why would God take us through fruitless and difficult seasons as pastors? Because again, for some of these rural pastors, it might be the next small town church they go to and they say, man, this just, what do I have to show for years of work? Or they've been there 25 years and they're in the middle of the worst part, you know, and they go, hey, what happened? Things were clicking, things were going well. And so, maybe unpack that a little bit. Why on earth would God bless, sanctify, and otherwise kind of put us through these fruitless and difficult seasons?
Sure. Well, you know, I'm fortunate. I look at a lot of pastors, and they've never really maybe even had a season where they've seen growth, where they've
sure.
seen the Lord really do some amazing things. And that breaks my heart, because I wish every pastor had at least one time in their life.
Sure.
If not more, where they've experienced that. For me to have experienced that in Medical Lake, where the church tripled in size, I really felt like I've got it down.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, I can take this formula anywhere, yeah. And the church is going to grow.
Feels so good in the moment.
Oh, you know? Absolutely. And, you know, the Lord wanted to, I really believe the Lord wanted to teach me that wasn't the case, that
sure.
growth comes from Him. And there's seasons. Every church goes through seasons. You begin with cultivating the ground, you plant the seed, you water the seed, and then there's a harvest. It's not all harvest.
Sure.
I mean, there's a lot of cultivating that has to go on and a lot of seed planting. So when I left Medical Lake, the church that the Lord put me into, like I had mentioned, had two pastor failures back to back. A lot of the things from the first pastorate started coming out when I was there, even though it had been years earlier. There were just, you know, four different pastors on staff at that time that were having affairs with different people in the church.
Dang.
And it just, you know, really, nobody could put their finger on it and prove it. But when I came, it all came out, and we were able to prove it. So the church, you know, had gone through some really difficult times.
Had some shattered trust, if
yeah,
you will.
Yeah, really some serious trust issues. But one of the things the Lord taught me personally was that I could do all the right things, which I had done before and experienced tremendous growth, but I didn't have the growth. I mean, when we did grow by 100 people, it was taken away because of
sure.
the worship wars. So, you know, I learned during that season of time that this is totally in God's hands. We should do our best.
Yeah.
We should really do everything we can to invest in ministry and to invest in people's lives, but the outcome is the Lord's. And when I left that church, I really came to that realization that what I thought I could do on my own, or what I could replicate and have it produce fruit, I really couldn't. And that was a good lesson. It was a hard lesson.
Sure.
It was 6 years that were difficult. Wonderful people that were in the church that stayed through
sure.
thick and thin. But nonetheless, it was still a time where it was harder on me than it was on them.
Sure.
because the church wasn't growing like it wanted to. And every time we would take a good step forward, we'd take two steps backwards.
Sure.
But again, it was a tremendous time of learning for me that God is the one who brings growth. Yeah. You don't bring it. You can do a lot of right things. You can do a lot of good things, but it's not a guarantee that there's going to be growth. That's up to God.
Yeah. And I love what kind of person that mentality makes us, you know, because I feel like all of us in ministry at some point have to have this humble recognition of like, oh, I can't formula my way out of this. I can't achieve this. I just have to trust God. And that's a huge development. Ending on a personal note, obviously you have three kids grown now. You and your wife have obviously raised and then obviously into adulthood, you know. And one of the, I think, the sorest subjects, you know, when we talk about ministry and pastoral pressure is kind of how family functions, you know. And what I have been impressed with truly is how you continue to lead your family, even into their adulthood, even the way that you've cared for your kids and taken times in ministry to try and support them and help them grow. And so, you know, you can be as practical or as, you know, kind of philosophical as you want, but I would just love to hear, like, there are probably plenty of pastors out there saying, man, how do I, you know, what's in my control? How can I as a parent care and lead and inspire my kids? But also, like, you know, how much is in God's hands and what does that look like? And so I guess just as we close out, take the next 5 to 7 minutes and chat with us about that.
Sure. Well, I have found it's critical that a pastor and their spouse not be negative about the church in front of their kids.
Sure.
Probably shouldn't be at any time, sure, but especially sure. In front of your kids. I mean, they need to hear the good stories. They need to hear the life change that God is doing, the positive things, because when we, you know, if we talk about the negative things that they latch onto that, they're going to be defensive for mom and dad. So if somebody has been critical or said something negative, and they hear about it, you know, they're going to want to defend their parents. So we have to be very, very careful as parents what we say in front of our kids.
Sure.
And I believe that's true at any age, not just when they're young, but really at any age, you know, junior high school, college, et cetera. So to me, that's a really important issue. You know, letting God work in them. I pray for my kids every single day. There's never a day that goes by that I don't lift them up in prayer and pray that God will draw them to himself. And they do things that disappoint me, obviously.
Sure.
But you know, that doesn't change my love for them. I mean, we understand that we're the same way with God. We disappoint him at times, but his love for us never changes.
Sure.
He's still committed to us. He still is wanting to work in our lives. So I have just found that it's critical. You know, when I attend pastor meetings, you know, a lot of my friends, their kids are all involved in ministry. They're all serving God fantastically.
Sure.
You know, my kids have gone through, all three of them have gone through some major struggles in their life and even in their faith, in their walk with God. You know, that's disappointing. I oftentimes will say, God, what did I do wrong?
Sure.
I mean, where did I miss it? How come they're blessed over here? My friends are blessed with their children, but I'm not experiencing that. And yet, I'm finding in my role as superintendent how many other superintendents, how many other pastors I meet whose kids don't serve the Lord at all.
Sure.
And they feel the same thing. They go through that same struggle. I'm thankful that my kids serve the Lord. I'm thankful that they have a relationship with God, even though, you know, that doesn't look like I think it should look.
Sure.
But that's the thing that I'm learning is the way God views me and the patience that God has for me. When I fail, when I blow it, I need to have that same love and patience for my kids. So it's coming to a place where I'm not expecting perfection out of them any more than I have that with God myself. But I do love them. I'm committed to them, and I'm going to keep speaking into their lives in every way that I can.
Sure.
And I'm thankful that they allow that. They're open to that. They don't reject that when I do. And they're continuing to serve God. It just looks sometimes different Some of their values are different than my values. Some of the things that I hold dear as far as compromises go, they don't hold. And so I'm having to learn to, you know, let that be between them and God.
Oh, sure.
But just continue to love them and pray for them that God will keep revealing himself and they'll keep drawing closer to him.
Mm. Well, thank you for sharing that. I believe that vulnerability is quite encouraging because it's true. Sometimes as a pastor, you can compare yourself to the highlight reel of, you know, well,
yes.
Such and such, you know, existed out here and nothing seems bad in their world. And you're like, okay, well, I'm trying the same things. You
exactly.
Know, but, anyways, Pastor Dave, this has been a wonderful conversation. I just want to say thank you for being on the podcast today. It's meant a lot to me.
Well, it's wonderful to be here, Joe. Thanks for what you're doing. And just praying that God will keep encouraging and strengthening. Where would we be without rural churches, rural pastors, people who are committed to their community?
Absolutely. Well, from all of us at Rural Advancement, I hope that you leave these conversations encouraged, equipped, and called, that you recognize again, as we do, that God is not just fully aware of what's happening in these small, out-of-the-way places, but that he is partnering with you, that he is with you and walking with you, as are we. And so, again, from all of us at Rural Advancement, you can always find us on Spotify or Apple Podcast, ruraladvancement.com. But truly, in rural form, the best way to spread these conversations is to find another rural leader and say, hey, there's some conversations I want you to be a part of. For this week, I've been your host, Joe Epley. He has been Pastor Dave Phillips. And we'll see you next time.